And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that you can also go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs, and we upload all the archive shows, so you can go there, go to the education link, scroll down to Blank Canvas, and you can see all of the shows that we've had recently and listen to them again if you missed the beginning. I'm in the studio tonight with LeVar Monroe. LeVar is an artist who has been doing a lot internationally. He has been getting into great shows, doing amazing residencies, and he is from Grantstown, Bahamas. So I wanted to have him in the studio this summer. He's been back making some work just to share his journey with some of our listeners, because, you know, I think also a lot of people here feel that, you know, oh, yeah, we're just this tiny little country. And, you know, but again, like, I think many Bahamians have gone out into the world and done great things. So I love to have them come back and say, no, yeah, I did that. And I watch what you're doing, and I find it, like, extremely impressive. So you went to grad school, and then how did you, because you work with a couple now, of so very important for an artist's career internationally is to get some good galleries behind them, right?
Yep.
Because a gallery does so much more than sell work, right? A gallery really is someone you can speak to about your work, will introduce you to, you know, institutions and clients that maybe you wouldn't have been able to reach before. And, you know, will help you on your path. So they're kind of a partner in the career in a way.
Yeah.
And so that's a really important important moment for an artist. So what was the first gallery that you worked with? Was it Nomad or was it?
No, it was Jack.
Oh, it was Jack Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a London gallery who specializes in African and diasporic work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so how did that relationship, how did you come across each other?
Oh, it was strange. It was just a random email from Jack.
Oh, yeah? But how had he found your work? Because I think, you know, people are curious.
Somebody,
like,
yeah, I think
you maintain a website.
Yeah, so I have a website, yeah, definitely. At the time, I was still in grad school. But I really was picking up a lot of momentum, like getting a lot of residencies, getting a lot of publications, that sort of thing. It was like a random email. But it was urgent, though. Like, he was like, I'm interested in you. And then he also gave me a contract, which I then forwarded to you, Amanda.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Remember? I remember.
And I was like, is this for real? So we agreed to the contract. And he was like, I need this work in, I think, like 4 months. Like,
wow.
Really, really short time. But it was pretty much all the work I did in grad school, my last year of grad school.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so it's pretty much all of that work.
Which is another reason, actually, grad school is kind of important, because I think, you know, galleries have become very savvy and they know they can find, you know, really interesting artists at a part in their career where they can still get them and still help, you know, because it's, when someone's become even more famous, it's hard to get them in the gallery because they have tons of people asking after them, the work's more expensive, whatever. So, I mean, grad school is also an important place, not just to develop your practice, but also, you know, it can be that doorway, because your professor might know someone, or a visiting curator. And I'm sure you had visiting curators coming through grad program.
We had many curators, artists, you know, galleries. But
now, what about the residencies? Because I think that's something also that a lot of Bahamian artists don't apply themselves, or don't apply to, because maybe they don't know, you know, why they should or why they matter.
Mm-hmm.
How did you mostly get invited to residencies? Were you applying to them?
Right now, I get invited to residencies, but early on, yeah, I applied to residencies.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very strategic regarding which residencies I applied to.
Mm-hmm.
So only high-end, if that makes sense, residencies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was on a roll. I mean, I was getting in to pretty much every residency I applied to.
Which were some of the key ones? I know you did one in near Duke, and that's how you developed your relationship with Trevor Schoonmaker.
Oh, no, yeah. So that was a postdoctoral fellowship I did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, something like a residency, it was a postdoc. But I think the residency-wise, McDowell was a very important one. Skowhegan was
Skowhegan's really important. So I think, again, like, our listeners don't know what that is. Why don't you talk about Skowhegan a little bit? Skowhegan, I mean, you know, if you tell anyone in the art world, oh, I was on the Skowhegan residency, it's got like a street cred to it, right? It's like, oh, you were at Skowhegan.
Yeah, it's like the gateway into the art world in many ways. So many younger, usually people in grad school or just entering grad school or just exiting grad school usually get to it. And it kind of, it's kind of a survey of the, I guess, all of the top artists within the world, actually, because people were there from from London and Helsinki and places like that. So yeah, it was pretty much like a worldwide residency.
And did meeting people like that, how did that, did it affect your own practice at all? Like to go from somewhere, maybe that you had a very clear idea. Did meeting a lot of people from places like Helsinki, whatever, clarify your own kind of identity and your own voice? Or did it ever muddy it?
It clarified it, but in a different way.
Yeah.
So now I know my competition.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's very important. It's always good to, I mean, because in grad school, people in your class aren't your competition. I mean, you compete with them, but they're not your competition.
Right.
If you want to be on a world stage, you're competing with people from all over the world.
Right.
So, okay, so now I know where I stand.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing Skowhegan would do is it forces you to break what you know.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you are in your first or second year, you just finished grad school.
Mm-hmm.
What they want to do is they want to break that mold and have you doing something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And from that residency, I began making the Shank series.
Okay.
So I began thinking about the prison as an institution of heroism,
mm-hmm.
but also thinking about the homoerotic space within the prisons.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did there was I ended up making 46 prison shanks,
mm-hmm.
but they were all pink and bejeweled.
Mm-hmm. And like lacy.
Lacy and phallic. Yeah. And at the time, I was also doing a lot of research on Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey, also known as the monomyth.
Right.
And a part of that, that reading, it kind of spoke about the notion of being in the belly of the beast, mm-hmm. which in many ways is the prison, rite mm-hmm. of passage. I mm-hmm. mean, when people come to prison, they're celebrated, the homecoming. So all of those mm-hmm. things, those shanks kind of pointed to for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just changed my mode of thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, pink became a color for me.
Yeah, no, I've noticed that also. Yes. But do you think that, in fact, you're wearing a pink T-shirt right now.
Yeah.
Do you think that related back to being from Grantstown, being from a country where a lot of men are incarcerated?
Definitely, yeah. So that's where it made sense for me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I grew up with many people who were and still are incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what it is for them to come back into the community and be mm-hmm. celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
What is never mentioned is the homoerotic space. Okay, yeah, I've been in prison, I'm big, I'm bold. But mm-hmm. the homoerotic space is kind of what I've been interested in most.
Well, it's something we're not really allowed to talk about, right?
Yeah, especially in the Caribbean space, mm-hmm. definitely not. Mm-hmm. But I thought that would be a good avenue to explore, mm-hmm. you know. So.
And it's so funny how we're not allowed to speak about. So I was watching a comedy the other day with my kids, and it was a very light comedy, but there was this one character who was a very upper class British man,
mm-hmm.
and he was speaking to his boarding school experience, which also, you know, back in the day had a lot of homoerotic quantity to it,
uh-huh.
and he said something very offhand about the experience he'd had, which I'm not going to repeat on the radio, but he uh-huh. said, you know, oh yeah, I remember that guy, he blah blah blah, you know, and just said it like very, and my kids didn't even pick up on it because it was a word they weren't familiar with, and
uh-huh.
but I just thought that's so interesting that in some contexts, you know, you can joke about something so traumatic very openly,
uh-huh.
which is something, you know, that was done back in the day against these male boarding schools full of young men, you know, at teenage years, you know, things happened. And there was uh-huh. a kind of open dialogue about it in a way. And it was like, oh, yeah, that just happens when you're young.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it made me think about, you know, our context here where there are things that are unspeakable.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, and speaking of prison, so another thing I did too is when I lived in St. Louis, mm-hmm. I worked in a detention center.
Mm-hmm.
Not worked, but like did work in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for a similar reason, so I was interested in this exchange, mm-hmm. you know. So what I would do is I would go into the detention center and do these workshops,
mm-hmm.
where I would allow the detainees to do these drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And what they would do is they would stand up in the front of the room, mm-hmm. classroom room, whatever mm-hmm. it is, and speak about their experiences, speak mm-hmm. about what the work was about. So in mm-hmm. a sense, it was art therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But that within itself really fueled a lot of the work I did at that time, too. Mm-hmm. And the work from that, actually, two of the pieces from that ended up in the Venice Biennale,
mm-hmm.
which,
mm-hmm.
again, is a very important stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very.
But again, the notion of this research, you know, mm-hmm. by all means, you know, going into these very uncomfortable spaces
mm-hmm.
to try to better fuel the work, you know. So
and to try to is it kind of a form of problem solving as well, in a way? I mean, like, there's a a societal kind of issue that you're just intrigued by or concerned by or disturbed by,
it's
by making the work, you're kind of trying to problem solve in a way?
It's a bit of everything that you just mentioned. Yes, definitely problem solving. It's curiosity. But it's also wanting to kind of speak on an issue that many people ignore. They think it's all right for people to be in prison. You know, it's all right for our prisoners here to be in slop buckets, 5, 6, 7 to a cell. That is not okay, you know. And just using that as, using art as a vehicle to kind of speak about those type of things.
Yeah, no, well, it's really not okay. And how did those works get selected? And then we spoke briefly. I mean, the Venice Biennale, I think, is the oldest Biennale in the world. It started in the late 1800s. It started out as kind of a survey of Italian art, and then they started inviting different nations. And it was kind of a bit of a World's Fair thing, you know, how back in a certain period where everybody was like, you know, and so the different nations had pavilions, and they would bring what they considered their best work. And then it kind of grew up over time, and then there's a, like a general exhibition. They select a curator every year to do a show which of work that they think is the most relevant work. And the year you were invited, there was a very well-known curator, Akuye Nwezor, who I think was the first curator of African descent to curate the Venice Biennale. He had done a documenta previously, which was amazing. And he put you in that show, which was really a show which I thought was extraordinarily powerful. It was a show that disturbed a lot of people because it was putting a lot of people on the periphery, center stage. And there were people that were like, why does everything have to be so sad and depressing? But I thought it was an extremely powerful show. And you were in that show, which I think was amazing. How did Akuye come across you, from a show that you'd done with your gallery? Or
I kind of think it's Jack again, because I think it was three of us from that gallery that were in the show. Some assume, I never asked Akuye exactly. Yeah, but I can remember the email. I put it in the trash because I thought it was spam.
You thought it was a joke?
I thought it was a joke, yeah. I thought it was, okay, this isn't for real. There's somebody, because it happened to me before where people try to like scam me off work, you know, and send bogus emails. That happened all the time. So I thought it was one of those. And then the woman who was in contact, I forgot exactly which lady it was, but she came back twice. And saying, is this very urgent? You need to answer, you know. And so finally, I answered, and I Googled Akuye and Wise to see if he was indeed the curator at the time. Yeah, he was. So that's how it was. I thought it was like a flam.
That's a great story. That's a great story. I love that. And then we, you know, we assisted in shipping that work there. The NGB.
Yep, definitely. Thank you.
Of course, you're so welcome. I mean, again, I think it's so important to be supporting artists in all their endeavors as much as we can, and especially to like do things outside, because as much as that we want to build inside and we want to build the gallery here and we want to build knowledge within our home audience and reach the out islands, of course it is so important for the world to know that the Bahamas is a place where great art is made.
Definitely.
And that's one of my, you know, again, when we had a pavilion one year, a Bahamian artist had a pavilion in Venice, and people, that was the first time we'd had Bahamian involvement in the Venice Biennale, and people were coming out and saying, oh my God, who knew? And I just, my mantra was, there's more where that came from.
There's
more where that came from. Exactly. We have to go to another quick break. I'm in the studio with LeVar Monroe. We're speaking about his experiences of being an artist who was born in the Bahamas, raised in Grantstown, and is now really internationally known and looked up to very much, and someone who, you know, I'm a big supporter of and a huge fan of the work, and I think the work is really deep and interesting and thoughtful, and I'm just so excited to see, again, the continuation of your career, and really happy that you're home with the studio here now. I think that's amazing. So I just asked LeVar to come in and share his journey with the audience. So we're going to be back to hear more from LeVar Monroe after this break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.